Tonight we begin on the seventh of the 10 most excellent practices for surviving the flood and getting to the other shore. And this is one I'm calling fully truthness. So here's a quote from Jorge Luis Borges, the Spanish author. He says, "I am not sure that I exist, actually. I am all the writers that I have read, all the people that I have met, all the women that I have loved, all the cities that I have visited." I'll read it once more. "I am not sure that I exist, actually. I am all the writers that I have read, all the people that I have met, all the women that I have loved, all the cities that I have visited." To me, that is a really concise, poetic explanation of full of truthness. So typically, this is translated as truthfulness. And as you might expect, I didn't like that word. because we typically are going to think that that means not lying, right? Truthfulness is telling the truth. And that is, in fact, part of it, but that is such a small sliver of this whole thing that I wanted to find a word that that implied more than that. So the Pali word that we're talking about is sakka, S-A-C-C-A, or satya in Sanskrit. And if you go online and plug this into your Pali English dictionary, which I'm very excited to say exists, you do indeed get a list of words that include truth and veracity, fact, that sort of thing. But it's a long list, and that's just part of it. So there's more to it than just being true or factual. So looking into it more, I discovered that this word for truthfulness is the same word that's used in the phrase the Four Noble Truths. So, as you all appear to know, the Four Noble Truths are sort of distilled, concise basis of what the Buddha taught. And if you look at the words for noble and truth, I could go on for half an hour about that, because it's quite cool the way they're connected and how actually the roots of the word that are used, that are translated as noble, actually are related to the root of the English word noble, which is sort of neat. But that's by the by. What's relevant to us is that the noble truths, the word noble is referring to the type of person that the Buddha hoped would his teaching would bring forth. And that would be people who can see things as they really are, which is the direct translation of the word vipassana, which is usually called mindfulness, to see things as they really are, to understand from experience the reality of being, to know the truth for themselves. Those are all the sort of characteristics of what the noble person refers to. These are the people who are no longer deluded by distorted perception. And so as an adjective, that word is describing the characteristic of something which is known by those who know things as they really are. Okay? So the word that is translated as truths is the reality that the people who know knew. That reality is that there is no self, there's no fixed thingness that you can point to that's separate from everything else, that we're not independent, living in a vacuum, where there's just this constantly re-emerging consequence of everything that came before. The Four Noble Truths essentially lead to that, and all of the suffering and such that we encounter is because we don't understand that we are not separate individuals, but that we are actually all verbs manifesting the same energy of being. Does that sound mystical enough? So, as Borges, or whatever he's called, said, he said, "I do not really exist." And so I, the I, the self, does not really exist. He says, "I am all of the writers that I have read and all of the women that I have loved." So each of us is the consequence of all of our experiences. We're interconnected in that way. And I do not exist. And it's ignorance of this reality that results in suffering. So when they knew this truth, those who knew were able to become free from suffering. And that's what the Buddha wanted to discover. So that's a very sort of delightful, complicated thing. But to put it briefly, the Four Noble Truths are the statement of the reality that those who know, know. So that word sakka, that becomes the seventh of the practices, is the practice of practicing this thing that they know, practicing the reality that sets you free. It's the practice of the truth that those who knew know. So it's not really a practice, because it's the practice of being not self, not a thing. If we're not a thing, we can't really be doing something. So it's just a being, a flow of life. And if you understand it this way, then we're simply the activity of being, of existing. And that's what this truth, or what this practice is calling us to be. Essentially, this is the practice of being fully enlightened. So you can see how the word truthfulness would work if you have all of that understanding behind it. But how to say that it's just about telling the truth is just a small fraction of that. Of course, telling the truth is important, and if we're fully enlightened, we're naturally going to be doing that, but that's just a small part of it. But if we are manifesting liberated existence, then we are being the truth. We're being fully true, which is why I've called it fully trueness, because we're the fullness of reality, essentially. Okay, so to summarize, the seventh of the most excellent practices is to manifest full enlightenment. Now, it seems a bit of a jump. Last month, we were talking about just waiting 5 seconds before you open your mouth when you're pissed off at someone. And then the next step is to be fully enlightened, right? Easy. But I will remind you that every practice that we have looked at so far has had this perfect ideal and then this practical application. They are more commonly translated as perfections instead of practices. I changed that word so that we don't feel like utter failures, thinking that we have to perfect ourselves. That's not the intention of this list of practices. But there is a perfect ideal that sort of informs the practice that we take on. So what we do is we do what we can. We do a doable version based on who we are and what we understand and where we are now. We have very little control over what goes on inside our heads, right? So that's probably not a good place to start looking for how to practice fully trueness. Because what we want to do is something that we can actually have some influence over. So what do we have a little more influence over, as we've discovered in the past 6 months, is how we respond externally to whatever situation comes up. So, for example, with generosity, we were looking at deciding to do generous things even if we didn't feel generous inside. With decency, we were talking about, fake it till you make it. Choose to act decently towards others even if your inclination is not to. Last week we talked about holding your tongue, especially when you don't want to. So we need to look for something that we can do, which is a version of manifesting the truth of not-selfness and unified enlightenment that we can actually have some success working on, and it's probably going to be in our behavior. Okay, so I'll see if I can summarize it without talking about enlightenment. The seventh practice is to manifest the truth of reality, which is that we are not individual, independent things, but we are more of a verb than a noun. We are activity. And so that's what we're trying to manifest as the seventh practice. But because I don't think anyone here is fully enlightened, instead of trying to do that, we're going to find something that we can do that's like a scaled-down version of manifesting enlightenment. A couple weeks ago, we talked about wisdom, and I encouraged you to learn something about what is, your model of truth. Listen to a lecture, read a book or something. So I'm not going to tell you what reality is for you, but you have been encouraged to explore it for yourself. So now we're going to put that learning to use because we're going to try and manifest our reality. And so you can look at what it is you believe or think to be true. What are your values? What are your fundamental understanding of how life works? And then see how you are, if you're manifesting that, if you're in line with your values and beliefs and such. Okay, let me just give you an example of what I'm talking about. For me, I think that if I want to purposely lie, then that's probably a reaction to an unpleasant experience or a fear or unclear thinking. And so if I feel like I want to lie, I can assume that I'm probably not thinking clearly, I'm not seeing clearly. Because that's my belief, is that if I see clearly, then I will want to be honest with people. If I feel like I want to be dishonest, then I can refer back to that and say, okay, therefore I'm not seeing clearly. And so knowing that, I can then make a decision if I'm going to act as if I was seeing clearly or act based on what I assume to be confusion or fear or whatever it is that's causing me to want to lie. So I'm using my values or my beliefs about how this psychology of my brain works or to help me make decisions that would be in line with those values, that when I'm fully enlightened, I'm not going to have to think about them and make those decisions because it's going to come naturally. But until then, I can try and have my behavior match my values. So I can do this practice of manifesting the truth even when I'm not internally actually manifesting the truth, by having an intention to, and then comparing what I'm doing with the intention. Does that make sense? Okay. Another example for me is that if I'm doing things that result in harm to people or to the planet, that I don't really understand that I'm harming the planet, because I don't want to harm the planet or people. And if I clearly understood how an action would harm somebody or harm the planet, I wouldn't want to do it. But I still want to drive my car. So intellectually I know that driving the car is not good for the people of Flagstaff, it's not good for the planet. But I don't yet have such a deep understanding of the connectedness of everything that I feel that and just instinctively don't drive, right? So if I did have that connection, I would probably walk a lot more than I do now. But I do know intellectually that that's true, so I can decide to moderate my action, even though I don't feel that I'm not manifesting that oneness with the earth by feeling the pain of driving the car and therefore stopping. But I can make the decision to act in a way that would be manifesting that truth and kindness to the earth. So I guess...
So how do you justify driving?
Right. This is actually an important comment. What I'm not trying to do is create a list of rules that I have to follow and creating a big pit of guilt that I'm going to jump into if I don't. I'm looking at what...
You can do.
What can I do? What do I actually feel? What do I actually believe?
Right.
Okay, so like when I left the church, I used to be a fundamentalist Bible-bashing Christian. I realized I was having a really hard time praying for miracles. And I thought, if I actually believed that my prayer is going to heal somebody, if I really believed that, I wouldn't have any problem asking for it. But the fact that it's just not something I'm inclined to do suggests that I don't actually think it's going to do anything. And from that, I discovered I didn't actually believe in God and I left the church. So in the same way, I know intellectually from the facts that every time I drive my car, I'm creating more pollution and noise and such. And yet my gut, my experience, my deep whatever it is, hasn't experienced that directly. And so I don't know it in the same way that I know what I've experienced, things that I've experienced. You know, I know that meditation saved me from killing myself. And so I have motivation to meditate. I don't know from my own experience that when I turn the key that I'm helping to kill trees. I know it in my head. And so I'm not trying to force a knowledge. I'm acting on a knowledge that I have in my head that I hope one day will become more instinctive and real to me. The point is not to throw a guilt trip on myself, but to sort of like we were doing with the decency, to fake it till I make it, to act in a way that I would want to act according to the values that I hold, while at the same time being patient with myself, with where I am, right? Because this is not about should. This is about what do I believe now, and am I acting in accordance with that? Not what do I think I should believe, but what do I believe now, and am I acting in accordance with that? What I'm going to suggest for your exercises, your homework this week, is to just look at some of the things that you feel are important values for you, or important ways of understanding the world, and look at your behavior and see how they mesh. To use a New Age phrase, you want to be living your truth. So I guess a simpler way of saying all of this is that this is the practice of manifesting the reality of being. And so we're going to look at what we understand to be reality and compare our behavior to see whether or not we're manifesting it. As an exploration, not as a list of rules. So you'll see on the homework, if you pick it up on the way out, I've got three different things you can think about. One is looking at thinking about what your values are. I don't like the word "what you believe," because I don't mean like if you believe in God or not. I mean if how you understand the world to work, and if your behavior fits in with that understanding. But just look at what's important to you and give it a few days to mull around and see if things come and go and change. And then look at how your behavior compares with that. And in places where you find that you're not behaving according to your own values, you can look at why that might be. Perhaps you aren't clear on your values. Perhaps you just never thought about it. Whatever. So it'll just be an exploration of that. How your manifestation of yourself correlates with your understanding of your reality.